Two brothers, when united, form the Disney Majors, fighting the powers of evil with their mouths. Here's your hosts, Jake and Eli Hollingsworth.
Hello, everyone. I'm Eli Hollingsworth, and I'm joined by my brother and co-host,
Jake Hollingsworth. And hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. And today is another Wednesday. Now, you're not mistaken. I did say another Wednesday. And sorry, but this podcast is delayed, and we don't even know if this will come out on Wednesday. Even this could even be a Thursday. So just for the sake of it, because we don't even know when this is going to go up. So I'm just going to say today is another Wednesday, or today is another Thursday, just because we don't know when this is going to go up. So there you go. Also, quick word, a quick news update. So last episode we mentioned the fact that Marvel's entire slate was delayed again. Everything was delayed by 2 months, and Ant-Man 3 was delayed by 5 months. All except the Guardians, which is good. But now we have a reason for why. This got out, and then Benedict Cumberbatch confirmed it. So what got out is that apparently the rumored reason was. Because the reason why it got out is not because of anything doing to do with the box office and whatnot. But the reason was because they felt like Doctor Strange had story problems. And so now they're doing extensive reshoots to try and fix the movie. And also add in more cameos and Easter eggs. They didn't feel they did enough.
Yeah.
And then that was the rumored reason. We didn't know how true that was, which it seemed pretty likely.
Yeah.
But then now, the Cumberbatch came out and confirmed that Doctor Strange 2 will be having reshoots from November to December.
Yeah.
So when they delayed Doctor Strange 2, they had to delay everything else. Yeah. So that's that, I guess. And then we've also been getting some crazy No Way Home footage.
Yeah, because Empire?
Footage, pictures coming out. Empire's been getting a bunch of, like, photos.
So what Empire did, an interview with Tom Holland, and they partnered with Marvel basically in their new magazine, because if you didn't know, Empire's a magazine company, so they've just been releasing a bunch of stills and art and interviews that they've done for No Way Home. Not they didn't make the pictures, but their images from No Way Home. And there's definitely some interesting ones here. So the first one that they released is Peter Parker with his mask off, wearing the
Far From Home suit.
You'll probably see it
in a mysterious location.
You'll probably see it in the cover art or something, but for this podcast episode. But so the first one that they did was Peter Parker, the Far From Home suit.
The Far From Home suit, Leonard Black one with his mask off, which apparently he'll be going back to at some point. This is confirmed to me from the final battle.
Yeah.
So he's somewhere. We don't know where he is, but he's somewhere.
Mm.
And it looks like people are guessing he's on the Statue of Liberty, because that's where the rumored final battle is rumored to take place.
Well, something that I saw that I think is more logical, and when I saw it, when I pointed it out, it is definitely a logical conclusion is that that part, I'm showing it to Jake so you guys can see it, but this part right here is from the final battle from Spider-Man 2. With the clock tower, because there's like a row of slots and stuff, which is like what we see in the Spider-Man 2 final battle. It definitely looks like that. I definitely would agree with that.
That is a stretch, I feel like. But whatever.
Well, also, when does the inside of the Statue of Liberty look like this?
Well, it doesn't have to be the inside. It could be any other part of the Statue of Liberty. But anyway, another image that we got, we've gotten two images of the fight with Doc Ock between Tom Holland, Spider-Man,
yes,
and Doc Ock on the bridge, which looks like it's going to be awesome. And so this one was a little bit iffy. It was an unfinished CGI rendering of Doc Ock, of Spider-Man running away from Doc Ock, which is a little questionable why he'd do that. And Doc Ock picking up a car and throwing it at him.
Yeah, which I don't think it's unfinished. It just looks unfinished because it looks bad. Like, I don't know what the
No, there's no way they're gonna let that slide in the movie. So I'm pretty sure it's gonna be unfinished.
When we see the movie, it will be unfinished. Yeah, I don't know why they decided to release this. I don't exactly know what the plan was behind this, where they were like, yay, this is the one, guys. This is the one. This is the still that we're going to release. Empire's doing a thing with us. We're going to do some stuff for No Way Home. This is the still that we're releasing. This is it, guys. So I don't know exactly what they're thinking with that, but because it looks kind of...
We got two better ones. We have two better ones now.
Yeah, it looks like they were like...
We got two more with Doc Ock. One of them was a close-up on Doc Ock. He looks exactly like he does from Spider-Man 2. That's because of the aging and magical wizardry technology that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was we got to see Spider-Man tangled up in Doc Ock's arms with an arm on his head.
Yeah,
Doc Ock arm. Just to be
clear. Yeah, tentacle. Robotic tentacle. Arm.
Yeah. Which looks like it could be a... It looks like that fight could go very badly for our Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And also that lets us know that scene on the bridge in the trailer is not fake. So I guess it's putting to rest those theories... Well, Hello Peter could have been faked. But it's putting to rest those theories that the Spider-Man-Iron Spider fight is fake. That people were thinking.
Yeah, well, people still think there could be some MCU CGI stuff going on there with that picture. Some people still think that it might be fake. For some reason.
Well, because this makeup of the arms in this movie are CGI.
Yeah.
So they had to, so when they were shooting it, Tom Holland said when they were shooting it, they had to, like, imagine that they were there.
Yeah, and, like, I think he said that Alfred Molina had, like, a little trouble adjusting because it's not how he did it in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, I think he did have trouble adjusting it.
He said there was a little bit of a transition for Alfred Molina since in Spider-Man 2, obviously the arms were puppets. Sometimes they were CG, but a lot of times they were puppets. So there was a little bit of a learning curve for Alfred Molina there, if you don't know.
Because in the second one, up close shots, they were puppeteering the arms, and then whenever he was like rising up into the air, those were always CGI.
Yeah, whenever he was like off the ground, because obviously they can't like do that.
They can't puppeteer that. That'd be too hard.
Yeah, that'd be this
time it's all CGI.
Yes. So.
But also, I think they also released a magazine, like covering No Way Home, and they teased a few things. I'm not too sure about this. We have to dig a little deeper into this, but I'm pretty sure we got confirmation that Electro, Sandman, and Lizard are in this movie.
Lizard
and Sandman. I think finally got confirmed because in the magazine, they mentioned a universe that has whoever plays Lizard, and they mentioned Thomas Hayden Church's Sandman.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, I forgot where it was.
I know that they showed a little cover that has teases, like they have Sandman's fist coming out of green stuff. They have something that looks like it might be Mysterio's fishbowl head on the specific. You can probably just look it up, like Spider-Man No Way Home, New Photos, Empire Magazine or something. You can find these images. There's one that looks like Mysterio's helmet, which is interesting because I always thought, apparently people don't think this, but I have always thought that it's kind of a guarantee that Mysterio is going to return in this movie.
Oh, yeah, it's obvious.
First of all, we all know that he's not dead. If you think that he's dead, then I don't know what's wrong with you. Because he's literally, in the comics at least, he's not what they call this in the movies, but in the comics he's called the Master of Illusion. Like, he's literally his job and his what he's known for is tricking Spider-Man. So, I think that definitely Mysterio is still alive. That's definitely that's given. But I don't know. I'm not sure anymore if he's going to appear in this movie physically. He might have some kind of influence somehow, maybe. But I'm not 100% sure that he is going to make a physical appearance in this movie. Who knows? He might. I was thinking that,
but after all these rumors got out with all these other villains, I kind of lost hope that Mysterio was going to be in the
movie. I was kind of like, yeah, it'd be kind of...
Just like with Kraven. I'm like, okay, is Kraven going to be in this movie? Then all these rumors came out. I'm like, oh, okay, Kraven's not going to be in this movie.
Yeah, that seemed like it would be kind of... what do you call it? It would be kind of like shoehorning Mysterio in. It's like Mysterio is kind of an afterthought. They're like, oh yeah, we're doing Multiverse, Sinister Six, Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield, Tobey Maguire. We're doing all these people, and then they're like, oh yeah, and then Mysterio. There's that villain from the last movie that's still alive, and they're just like, meh.
Who cares?
You also have Doc Ock's arms in this picture. It's the one comic book.
There's a Green Goblin pumpkin bomb, and then there's a Doctor Strange logo.
There's
the Eye of Agamotto, which got destroyed, but he has it in this movie.
Yeah, the Eye of Agamotto got destroyed, and yeah,
Thanos crushed it anymore. And then
fueling some rumors that I think we've said this before, that Doctor Strange is not really Doctor Strange, but somebody else is impersonating.
That's not rumors, just like theories.
Yeah.
People were thinking it could be Strange Supreme from What If, but after the finale, that theory got put to rest because he gets redeemed at the end of What If, spoilers. And so, that knocked that out.
Yeah.
But some people think that it might actually be Doctor Strange, it's just he's being he's being overconfident.
Yeah, which, no.
Like, which could make sense, because, like, he knew the plan. Because he saw all those possible realities for how Infinity War and Endgame could play out. And he knew that the only way to do it is if he died and then the Avengers bring everybody back. So he saw that reality. And so that could be him thinking again that he could do it and be like, yeah, oh yeah.
No.
But still, I'm a little... I actually can see that, but I'm still like on this. When it comes to Doctor Strange, whether or not it's actually him, I'm still on undecided.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think that it's either someone impersonating Doctor Strange or Doctor Strange having to do something for someone, like do this. He's working under the control of somebody. Mephisto? No, I'm just kidding.
Not Mephisto. That's just a good one.
Come on, they have to show Mephisto somewhere in this MCU.
Or maybe Disney won't let them do things that are related to the devil.
Yeah.
That's just something we'll have thrown out.
Really?
I think so.
Well, if they're letting them do a questionable scene in Eternals, then. I think they'll let them do something related to the devil.
Because Mephisto is basically Marvel's version of the devil.
We have a lightning bolt that is yellow with a green background. Obviously,
that's Electro.
Electro wearing his original comics colors. Jamie Foxx is not going to be blue because for some reason that
was.
You
already knew that.
It was for some reason. I know, but still, it's like for some reason that was a trend. Oh, it was in the Ultimate Comics, right?
Ultimate Comics, he was blue. Electro was blue. Classic ones, he was just like normal human.
Yeah, and in the classic comics, he was red and yellow.
He was green and yellow.
He's not the Flash. He's green and yellow, yeah. That's his original color. So, he'll be returning to those in Spider-Man No Way Home. I don't think there's anything
returning,
else to
he'll be donning them for the first time.
Well, I mean, the character of Electro will be returning to his classic comics colors. Doc Ock's arms, pumpkin bomb, I think that's all from these photos then. I think so. That's... Oh, also with Empire Spider-Man... Or not Spider-Man. Tom Holland, which he is technically Spider-Man, but... Tom Holland was doing an interview with Empire, and he mentioned a scene where there's going to be him, Aunt May, Happy Hogan, and a mysterious fourth character all sitting around
a
table.
He wasn't allowed to reveal the said person.
Yeah, so he withheld his piece, and he said that there's a mysterious fourth character that's going to also be in this scene that he's not going to say, that are all sitting around a table talking about what it means to be a superhero. And of course, this has gotten fans speculating all over about who it could be.
A lot of people think it's either going to be Toby, Andrew, some people say Venom. I disagree with the Venom. I'm like, why would Venom be there?
Venom is not what you call a hero, even though he calls himself... He's Venom, but even though in the second one, he calls himself the Lethal Protector. Yeah, which I don't really like Sony's version of Venom, like, at all. Because it's...
He's a million miles ahead of the one from Spider-Man 3.
But
he's still not the greatest. Because like,
I guess you could say look. I mean, like, design-wise, sure, yeah, he's better than Topher Grace. But...
Topher Grace, all he did was just keep peeling his face back. So then all they showed was him with bangs.
Yeah, but like, so Venom as a character, though, I just don't like the Sony version because they're like trying to make him a hero, and it's like, and they're like just making him silly, and it's goofy, and I'm just like, that's not what Venom is. Venom is like this scary, creepy, like, you know, he's got that long tongue.
Very creepy, like, and very 80s.
Yeah,
character.
Exactly. Like, he's more of a scary character, and I'm like, that's not. They're not being very true to the character in the Sony, what is it, the Spumic, or the...
Sony Spider-Man Universe, that's the new name.
Oh, yeah, so it's
SSU.
Like... SSU. The Sugh. And the Sugh version of Venom, I just don't really like it that much. So, with the character of Venom that they've established in the Sugh...
Okay, well, design-wise, you think that the one from the Venom movies is better? Which one do you think characterizes better? The Topher Grace one, the Tom Hardy one, or neither?
I don't know. I'd say Topher Grace is better character-wise because he's like actually a villain and he actually has like kind of a backstory where he turns evil on Peter Parker because of jealousy. Is it executed?
I get it. I'm the one who's all for classic stuff because that's like the classic Eddie Brock story from the comics was in Spider-Man 3. They were rival photographers and then Peter humiliates him and then Eddie gets angry and then he bonds with the symbiote.
Yeah, exactly.
When Spider-Man takes it off. That's the classic story. But still, I think that Tom Hardy did a better job what he was given than what Topher Grace was given.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, the Topher Grace story is... I think the Topher Grace story is better.
That's also the problem with Tom Hardy. He doesn't have a Spider-Man. So that's why... I guess you could say that he's not as good because he doesn't have a Spider-Man. Because he didn't have a Spider-Man.
Yeah, but see, I don't really think that helps at all. Like, it's just the character in general. Like, he's not a villain. He's supposed to be a villain, but we can't have a villain anymore. They always have to be relatable. There's always a tragic backstory of, oh, the villain is always like they're more fun or interesting or whatever. So I think Topher Grace, the story is better. Is the execution perfect? No, but I think the story is genuinely better than Tom Hardy Venom because it's just like, oh, we're gonna be silly and goofy and and I'm like, yeah, no, it doesn't really work. So, I think that with the version of Venom that they've established in the he is likely to be talking with Tom Holland about what it means to be a hero. Because apparently Venom is a quote-unquote anti-hero instead of a villain.
When it comes to who that is, put me down for either Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield. I'm going the obvious route, but I don't care. Put me down.
Yeah, well, no, that's who I think. I think it's either going to be Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield. That's kind of a given.
Toby's more likely than.
Or even Charlie Cox Daredevil. That was another suggestion. Because people are still holding out hope that Charlie Cox Daredevil is going to be in this movie, which I am not 100% sure.
Oh, come on. He's totally going to be in it.
I don't know. I feel like that would be a little bit too much. People are also thinking that Kingpin is going to somehow be introduced in the Hawkeye show.
Oh, I've heard about that.
Because the main villains are like these Russian, or not Russian, they're like some kind of Boston, I don't know, they all have some kind of
accent.
I think
the rumor is that like they're going to put Kingpin in there to tie it in with No Way Home, because No Way Home might have Charlie Cox in it.
Yeah, so...
So they can put...
So the main gang that Hawkeye is fighting, these like people in red jumpsuits, they're part of this like certain crime organization that is run by Kingpin.
Yeah.
And like there's even one comic storyline that it seems like they're adapting in Hawkeye, where like there's an auction for footage of Hawkeye being a criminal that they're selling at an auction, and we see an auction in the trailer of Hawkeye, and people are thinking that's a reference to that comic storyline, and one of the people bidding on that footage is Wilson Fisk. So there's multiple little references to the Kingpin in Hawkeye, and usually when there's a lot of little references to someone like Kang, like we saw tons of references to Kang in Loki, and Kang ended up being the villain, or the one who, or he who remains. So I think that Kingpin will probably be in the Hawkeye show. And so, I don't know, I guess Charlie Cox might be in Spider-Man No Way Home. But I think my guess that I'm going with is, who is this mystery fourth character? I think my guess would be Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, I think the two Spider-Mans, I think Tobey's more likely than Andrew, because I don't know if Andrew necessarily works.
This is the, I don't know, I'd say that would be the most exciting, to see Tobey Maguire talking to Tom Holland about what it means to be a superhero.
And apparently, Spider-Man No Way Home, apparently we're going to get the most, one quick final note, apparently we're going to get the most fan service-y thing that they can put in these movies in No Way Home. And it's kind of, I'm surprised, people might be seeing this coming, some people might even know what this is. But it's a certain line of dialogue that has never been said in any MCU film. They've been too scared to say. But now, apparently in this one, they're going to take the training wheels off and actually say it. And apparently they're actually going to have him say at some point, "With great power comes great responsibility."
Oh yeah, did we ever talk about those leaked lines?
No, we never did. Ooh. Well, that'll have to be another separate podcast. But apparently they're actually going to have someone say, "With great power comes great responsibility." Because like, in Civil War, they had him say it, but it was said differently. He said,
yeah,
"When you can do the things that I can, but don't, and then the bad things happen, they happen because of you." Which then again, that's actually kind of an allusion to his origin now that you think about it.
Yeah.
But still, that's him. But that's also, that can be used as, one, as an allusion to his origin, because you don't need to see that again. And two, that can also be used, that's also used as their version of, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, because for some reason they were too afraid to say it, because they wanted to be different.
And also, but now, but I think even the training wheels are starting to come off with What If, because in What If, he literally mentions Uncle Ben.
Yeah, exactly.
And his mom and dad, too. So yeah. The training wheels, it seems like, are definitely coming off when it comes to avoiding classic Spider-Man things.
Yeah, so I'm very happy about that.
I think this is a sign that they're going to finally move back to the traditional Spider-Man things as they go forward.
Yeah.
And not trying to be trying so hard to be different.
Yes. So is that everything for No Way Home? That's everything.
Yeah, that's everything.
All right, so we haven't even gotten to the main thing that happened today. So today, Disney Pixar decided to release the trailer for Lightyear. Bum ba da dum, bum bum ba da dum. That's not the theme. What is it? Dun 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 da 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 da. The Space Ranger music. What a trailer! I am very excited for Lightyear. It seemed to me like at first, like one of those, I mean, I was excited for it when they first announced it at Disney Investors Day. I was like, ooh, this is interesting. This is cool. I'm very excited for that. But there was some doubt in the back of my mind, like, is this just going to be another like prequel spinoff where it just seems like they're running out of ideas?
We talked about this a lot in our early Pixar episodes, like at the beginning of the year. This is insane.
Yeah, wait, didn't we talk about Lightyear like every episode?
We talked about like 5 episodes in a row and it just dropped.
Yeah, so...
I mean, I even thought that, too, when they announced it. I was like, okay... I even thought to myself, are they milking this?
Yeah, I was like, oh, great, another Toy Story movie. But this movie seems awesome. It looks incredible. Like,
oh, yeah, it looks like
it's going to be, like, an amazing movie. It's like a sci-fi action-adventure. I think they've described... I think the director, Angus McLane, I think is his name, described it as Pixar's love letter to science fiction movies or like space movies or something like that.
No, they're probably gonna have a bunch of Star Wars references and they're probably gonna reference Star Trek. Someone's gonna do the Star Trek, I'm calling it now. Someone's gonna do the Star Trek salute. Calling it now.
So I'm very excited. Like the teaser trailer, just the little minute and a half of footage that we've seen looks amazing. Like I am very excited for this movie. There was doubt. I was like, is this just going to be another dumb spinoff where they're running out of ideas? But no, this looks like ambitious and it's got like lots of like style and it's got very good cinematography. 2022 is shaping up to have some pretty amazing movies. We've got what? The Batman. We've got Lightyear. We've got Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which we don't know if that's going to be phenomenal, but it's going to be very cool at least. So
they have a trailer for them.
I forget what other movies. There's so many other ones. Doctor Strange: The Multiverse of Madness.
Black Panther 2, but no, I don't really care about that one.
Yeah, I don't know if that can count as like a fantastic movie.
Last year, which is crazy, when we did our top 5 most anticipated MCU films, I had Black Panther 2. That's all we knew it as back then. I had Black Panther 2 at number 2 on that list. Like, second most anticipated. But that was before Chadwick Boseman died.
Yeah.
And then he died, like, a week after that podcast was made. And ever since then, Black Panther 2, or Black Panther Wakanda Forever, as it's now called, has dropped. And it's because he's not going to be in it. Like,
yeah.
They already confirmed they're not doing CGI double. So, I mean, I'm just like, without Chadwick Boseman, I don't know if it can be as good as the first one. I loved the first movie. And I was really excited for the second one, but then now Chadwick's not going to be in it, I'm just like, why bother? Just leave it at that.
Yeah.
But they'll still watch it anyway. But yeah. As of right now, I mean, they can win me back, maybe. But as of right now, I'm not looking forward to the second one. But anyway, Lightyear.
Lightyear looks amazing. Now, okay, so story...
I've already expressed why I'm looking forward to that one.
Story-wise, what people have managed to piece together from the trailer is... the main focus of the story is going to be time travel. Now,
it's weird.
Seems a little bit like woo, because usually when a studio starts doing time travel movies, it's usually at the end of a franchise when they've run out of ideas and they're like, wow, what can we do? Time travel.
Reboot it.
Now,
time travel stops, reboot everything.
Yes, exactly. So this is the beginning of a franchise,
Also,
quote unquote franchise.
Also, they can do that if like they're either the franchise is going off the deep end in terms of quality, or if their movies stink and like the timeline's getting messed and like the continuity's getting messed up.
I guess that they've kind of set themselves up for a sequel. I was just thinking about this. I was thinking about franchise, and then I thought, well, are there going to be sequels to Lightyear? Which, first
probably
of all,
not.
if it's successful, then Disney will probably order a remake. Or not a
remake.
Well,
they'll probably order this. No, no. If anything, they'll order a show, because they want more shows for their streaming service.
Yeah.
If anything, they'll probably order a show.
Like Dune? I know that Dune just came out recently. We're not probably not going to see that for a while, and I have no interest in Dune. They already announced a sequel, and they already have a release date. I'm like... That's confidence, I guess. Either that or arrogance.
Lots of people are pointing out, like, they announced a part two for that, but they didn't announce a part two for Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Yeah. So, anyway, back to Lightyear. I think they kind of set themselves up for a sequel a little bit, because in Toy Story 2, when Buzz meets the other Buzz, he has that new special belt, anti-gravity belt, which might be just a reference to the video game.
I think it's just a reference to the game.
Yeah, maybe. But Buzz Lightyear might get a special belt in if they do a sequel. He could get like a anti-gravity belt, and then that's what inspires the video game and then the new action figure. Who knows? So first of all, Lightyear. What is Lightyear? Is it a prequel? Is it a sequel?
It's an in-universe prequel to the Toy Story franchise, showing where the Buzz Lightyear action figure came from.
Easiest explanation that I found when I'm explaining it to people is just, it's basically Buzz's Woody's Roundup. It's like, Woody's Roundup was a TV show that existed in this quote-unquote real world.
And that inspired Woody to be made.
And then because of the Woody's Roundup TV show, then they made a little cowboy doll from the TV show of the main character. And so this is basically that. It's a movie that came out in the quote-unquote real world and then inspired an action figure to be made off of it. So,
where Buzz Lightyear looks insanely like Chris Evans. And I think they can... That's some people wondering that that might be a continuity, but really it's not, because they can kind of get away with it, because like Buzz Lightyear, Buzz in the Toy Story movies, we don't see his hair.
Yeah.
So they can kind of get away
And it seems like in the Lightyear movie, they're just using it as like a cap that he wears, like some kind of head protection thing.
I think all astronauts wear that, so that's nothing new. That's what all astronauts wear.
So like...
Some like headpiece.
Because Buzz Lightyear... Ooh, he's got some nice hair in this movie.
And also, people pointed out, I noticed this, but if you are pointing it out, I know it's his first, just so you guys know. It's like that shot where it shows him seeing the classic Buzz Lightyear outfit in his case.
Mm-hmm.
People are pointing out that's very similar to the Avengers, the first one where Steve looks at his Captain America suit. I'm like, I caught that immediately, just like, that's the reference to the Avengers.
Another thing that
the difference is, in Lightyear, he's smiling, whereas in the Avengers, he's not smiling.
Another thing that is reminiscent of Chris Evans is Chris Evans, for some reason, uncanny ability to start famous catchphrases and then not finish them and cut to black.
Well, that wasn't his fault in Age of Ultron. Basically, if you wonder what happened, long story short, Marvel wouldn't let Joss Whedon put all of his ideas into Age of Ultron. So in order to get revenge, Joss Whedon had Captain America at the end of Age of Ultron say, Avengers, and then cut it off.
Yeah,
So that's long story short.
So Chris Evans, for some reason, just likes to just leave us hanging with these classic catchphrases that we love. And so he's like, to infinity, and then we cut to black. It's like, Chris Evans, do you not understand what the point of a catchphrase is? Like, nobody's here to listen to half of catchphrases. So I'm sure they're going to say it in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
But like, at least in this first trailer, it's like, ugh.
That wasn't his fault in Age of Ultron, so kind of some slack, Eli.
Because Chris Evans did that in Age of Ultron. He's like, Avengers! And then it cuts
again,
to black.
Again, wasn't his fault.
Leaving us hanging, so we're like,
cut him some slack.
So, what else? So that's what this movie is. It's kind of like the movie that inspired the action figure. And so, story-wise, what people have been able to piece together is time travel. What does this mean? Apparently, the main first part of this movie is going to be Buzz Lightyear and his little partner, friend, other person of Star Command. Trying to slingshot around the sun to then go into hyperspeed, which will allow him to time travel to the future, apparently.
Sounds a lot like Mission Space at Epcot.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you slingshot around the moon and then you go into hypersleep for 3 days. Well, it seems like to you is 3 seconds.
Which I don't know if he's going to go into hyperspace or hypersleep necessarily.
He's not.
But this is actually a real world theory that, or the real world thing where you can time travel if you go to a planet that has bigger mass, then like time is slower or something like that. So this is a real world thing.
That's a real world theory.
I think it's actually true. So like the time on what's the big planet? Mars? No. Saturn?
Saturn.
What's
yes.
the big Jupiter? Jupiter.
Jupiter.
So like time Jupiter. On Jupiter is different. It's like slower or something. So if you want to live quote unquote long, like if you want to quote unquote time travel, which is basically just living longer, then go to Jupiter because it's the mass is bigger, so the time works differently or something like that. So him slingshotting around the sun in the Buzz Lightyear movie is going to be him time traveling, which you can see in the trailer when there's that little robot writing on a whiteboard. You can see a little diagram of like hours and minutes. And like the little path that Buzz is gonna go around, and so heavily indicating time travel. So interesting route to take. So then what the story apparently is going to be is him slingshotting around the sun and time traveling and then becoming like a big hero or something, maybe. And so then that's what the movie is gonna be about, is just like that's an early part of the movie. That's what people have theorized. Who knows if it's true or not? I know the time travel is probably going to be what's happening. But I don't know about any other details for sure.
Wait a minute. They could be doing this to reset a Toy Story franchise. I'm just kidding. They wouldn't do that.
Yeah, no. Also, we have not seen the evil Emperor Zurg, which is obviously Buzz's main foe in the Toy Story universe, which he is going to be the villain of this movie, though, because there is one shot where you
obvious.
Can see Buzz walking toward this big ship that's going to open up either Buzz or maybe it's Zurg, who knows. And the robots that are staying there have Z's on them for Zurg.
Zurg. Of
he likes evil. All evil villains love to brand all of their stuff. So that is exciting. Is there anything else? Oh, yeah. Buzz's suit has gotten an upgrade to live action form. Or quote unquote live action form. Realistically animated form.
It looks like the outfit that you wear in Disneyland Adventures, to be honest.
Yeah, it does. That's funny. Yeah, so his suit, it has the classic red button, except it looks like it might be used for something else.
I wonder
else.
If he'll have wings come out when he flies.
Yeah, I hope he has the wings. That would be awesome. Like he's like he's like I don't know, he has to like fly or something, like the jetpack. Oh, that'd be awesome.
Oh yeah, that'd be amazing.
Nostalgia. That's like I don't know why, but just watching this trailer, I think I'm gonna cry during this movie. I don't know. It looks like incredibly emotional. I don't know. It seemed like there's gonna be some light, funny moments in there too.
Well, duh.
With that weird cat thing, robot type thing, where it's like beep, boop, beep, boop, beep. I don't know. That wasn't that funny to me in the moment, but
no.
I'm sure that there's gonna be some humorous moments in here. Pixar is always funny and deeply emotional at the same time. So we'll have to see. Lightyear looks amazing. I am super excited for it. It's gonna be awesome. I can already tell. So I'm very excited for Lightyear. Are you excited for it, Jake?
Yeah, looking pretty good. I'm excited to see what Chrissy Boy does in this movie. Especially since it's, I think this, I still
yeah.
know it. Well, no, he's done more movies after Avengers Endgame. But I am excited to see Chris Evans again in a movie.
We've only heard two things from him in this trailer, and that's just a and to infinity and.
Does he
yeah.
say to infinity?
Yeah, he only says and. So that's all we hear from him. He is. I don't know. Chris Evans seems like a logical choice.
Well, he does. I've always been behind Chris Evans, but I've always been thinking like, I remember like being like, what he's not, and then I remember being like, this might be a little weird choice. But then when I heard Chris Evans was gonna be doing the voice for him, I'm like, oh, that works.
Yeah, so I'm very excited for this movie. It's going to be great. So, yeah, that's our thoughts on Lightyear and Spider-Man No Way Home. So now we can move into our discussion on the Black Cauldron. So we'll see you on the other side, everybody.
See you on the flip side.
I'm so excited for Lightyear. Okay, first of all, before we get to Black Cauldron, I just wanted to say that if Randy Newman is not doing the music for Lightyear, then I am boycotting it.
Wow, that's a sad reason to boycott. No offense, but it makes sense.
I don't know. I feel like Randy Newman's not going to do the music because Randy Newman did the music for more of like the nostalgic.
They should get John Williams to do it.
Nah.
If they're complimenting all sci-fi movies, then they should do it.
I feel like, I feel like Randy Newman is more for like the nostalgic feeling of Toy Story, his music, whereas this is like a sci-fi action movie, so I don't think they will, but they should because he's awesome. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Lightyear. I mean, we did, but not for our movie of the week this week. Our movie of the week this week is Black Cauldron, and our behind-the-scenes nugget for today is that...
Okay, say it the Black Cauldron. Say the behind-the-scenes nugget first. I need to say here and process Black Cauldron first.
So our behind-the-scenes nugget for today is that this is another shift in Disney's management. So what I forgot to mention on the Jungle Book or whatever was after that episode. So Jungle Book was Walt's last film that he worked
on. And then Aristocats was after the Jungle Book.
So then he died, and of course somebody else had to take the company. And that was, I forget the guy's name, but I feel kind of bad for him because he's kind of like the forgotten Disney CEO. Because, like, all the people who everyone remembers is
Walt Disney, Michael Eisner, Bob Iger, and now Bob Chapek. Two of those are remembered for being awful.
Yeah.
And for good reason.
Yeah. So two are good, two are terrible.
Two no one likes, and for good reason.
Yeah. Bob Paycheck. I mean, Chapek.
And then the new one coming in here, Michael Eisner.
Yeah, so that name
sounds evil.
After Jungle Book, there was another guy. I forget his name, but he was like...
Wasn't Roy Disney, was it?
Wasn't Roy Disney, okay. No. Roy didn't ever want to take over the company as CEO.
Oh, that's right, okay.
Roy E. Disney, or... I forget which one. So there was Roy E. Disney, and there was Roy O. Disney. I always forget which is which. One is like the nephew of Walt Disney, and he was like kind of behind the scenes in the animation department in the Renaissance time period, probably a little bit before that too. And the other one was Walt Disney's brother. I think that was Roy O. Disney. He was his brother. He never wanted to take over the company as CEO. But so the one that's in between Michael Eisner and Walt Disney is, I forget the guy's name, but he's like Walt Disney's like distant second removed cousin or something. Who never even wanted to go into the film business in the first place. So he was just kind of pulled in because Walt always wanted to keep the role of CEO in the family. So they were like, okay, this guy can come in. And so he never even wanted to go into the film industry, but he was like, okay. So he came in and was CEO until now with Black Cauldron. And I just feel like he kind of gets forgotten. Like, I feel kind of bad for the guy. Like, he didn't even want to go into the movie industry in the first place, and he just kind of roped in because he was related to Walt Disney.
Reined him in.
He was like his distant second related cousin, that's twice removed cousin or something like that. It was like, it's like something weird. And I don't think he was like really, I don't think he was terrible, but I also don't think he was really that great either. So he's kind of in the middle, which is why he gets kind of forgotten, because there's like all the other Disney CEOs are really remembered for being really great or being really bad.
That's a little weird when you think about it.
So like there's been five Disney CEOs as of now, and there's two that have been really great, two that have been really bad, and one that has been kind of in the middle. So it's pretty balanced out. So I'm pretty happy about that. That makes me happy. So that guy's kind of in the middle. And then now, with the making of Black Cauldron, actually during the making of Black Cauldron,
they brought in Eisner.
New management has come in. Michael Eisner is the new CEO of Disney. Also, like, his chief executive officer, that's CEO. That's not the chief creative officer, maybe, is Frank... I'm blanking. Like,
Jeffrey Katzenberg?
No. He's head of animation.
Oh, that's right.
The other guy is... I forget it. But he died in a helicopter crash later. So as of right now, but he's like the right-hand man, and the head of animation is Jeffrey Katzenberg.
And he's the one who left and created DreamWorks?
Yes, he's the one who left, got mad at Eisner, left, and created DreamWorks, but that's...
All right, we'll tell that story at some point in the podcast. At some point in the podcast, we'll tell that story.
Yes. So Jeffrey Katzenberg is, I mean, he's a good creator. He's made some pretty good stuff. Like,
but he met...
I mean, Shrek is a great movie. Shrek is good. I love Shrek.
I thought Shrek 2 was better, though.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Like, the magic of the first one.
The first one was still good. I think the second one might be better.
I know. Like, people love the second
one.
It's
good.
And I like the second one. I do think it's good, but...
It's really good. Puss in Boots is the bomb. He's really awesome.
I don't know if I'd say it's better than the first one, though. Because the first one is just classic.
Both are classic.
Anyway, what was I talking about? I was talking about
Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Yes. So he's not the most. He's got a bit of an attitude.
When he first came on, he wasn't the most bright person in the room, for sure.
No. He's a creative guy, I guess.
I'm talking about what he did to Black Cauldron.
But he just has a bit of an attitude, and he just has his own like He definitely has his own opinions on things. So, in the making of Black Cauldron, if you didn't know, I don't know if I've explained this before, in animation, how things work is you plan the whole movie out before you make it, which might sound weird, but... So, what you do is... They do this in live-action movies, too. You have something called pre-visualization, where you... it's different in animation than it is in live-action. So, what you do is you have this very rough example of how the movie is going to flow. Every shot is planned out in either half-decent drawings or in half-decent little animated things. So... In animation, they'll just draw these really rough drawings and literally plan the movie out second by second to see how long it's going to be, how long they'll show a certain shot, how long the shots are going to be, how long we're going to stay on a person while they're talking, all that stuff, so they can plan it out before they start animating, because animation is very expensive. So they have to plan it all out to know what they're going to animate so they don't waste any animation. And it's very rare that they'll have, like, deleted scenes after it's animated, unless they're really, like, they really change their mind on something.
They're really boring.
Yeah. Or, like, they're like, wow, this really isn't working, so they just change it.
That's how it works. Like, if deleted scenes are in there, like, specifically for live-action films, I guess, well, I guess the live-action films and anime films work the same, because, like, if there's a deleted scene, if there's a scene that they feel runs a little too long or makes it, or drags the movie down, then they'll cut it. That's why there's... deleted scenes. But live action movies is different. That's why they have reshoots.
Yeah.
Usually. So it's like, if there are deleted scenes, they'll reshoot it. They'll like delete the scenes and then reshoot it to where it doesn't feel weird.
Yeah. And
sometimes, in the case of Justice League and Suicide Squad, they'll order reshoots and reshoot the whole thing.
Yeah. And if you're wondering, yes, pre-visualization is different than storyboards. Storyboards are just rough drawings. Pre-vis is literally planning out how long the movie is going to be and, like, putting each sequence in exactly how long it's going to be.
And this is animation.
This is for animation and live action. Okay. For live action, they do it a little differently. They do actually 3D animated pre-visualization. It looks really terrible. There's no shading or anything on it. It's just, like, characters barely moving.
I don't know what James Gunn said, but recently, a few weeks back, James Gunn said he finished the storyboards for Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Oh, really?
And he showed a picture of them all stacked up. There was a lot.
Oh, I think that was the script, actually.
No, that wasn't the script. It was definitely different.
Oh, okay. So 3D animation, or for live action, it's 3D animated pre-visualization. And animation is 2D. So why is this important? Because this is important so then animation... Animation costs a lot of money, so they have to plan the whole movie out so they don't animate something that they're not going to use, because that's just wasted money. And Jeffrey Katzenberg was the only one who didn't get the memo, and that's a bad thing when you're the head of animation. So Jeffrey Katzenberg came in about halfway into production on this movie, or not halfway, but like in the pre-visualization stage, or like, yeah, near the end of pre-visualization. And so he came in and saw the movie and didn't like it. He was like, well, this is too dark, this is too, you know, blah. So he didn't like it. And Jeffrey Katzenberg came from a live-action background, working with 20th Century Fox, kind of, I think.
On Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Yeah.
That's actually the name.
And he was working with Michael Eisner, which is why Michael Eisner brought Jeffrey Katzenberg over as head of animation. So this man doesn't have a background in animation. I get that. Which I question why they made him the head of animation, but you know what? We'll let it slide. Because he did pump out, him and Michael Eisner, as much flack as they get, while Michael Eisner was CEO and while Jeffrey Katzenberg was head of animation. I don't think Jeffrey Katzenberg gets as much flack, but while they were in command, we got the Disney Renaissance, so.
True.
I don't blame them too much. Jeffrey Katzenberg saw the Black Cauldron and he was like, well, I don't like this. And so he thought it worked like a live-action movie, and you could just be like, well, snip, 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 cut this out. Actually, they were animating. They weren't in the pre-visualization stage. They were in the animation stage. They were almost done
with the movie.
Yeah, and so he was like, all right, well, it works like a live-action movie does. I've done this before. Let's just cut this out.
And everyone's just like, no, you can't do that.
The animators were like, yeah, no. And he was like, uh-huh, yeah, see, look, I'm just going to just take some scissors and just snip, snip, snip. cut it right out of the movie, and so it cost them, like, millions of dollars.
And it went from, because the movie's like an hour and 22 minutes, I think, and he edited out 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
So it probably went from an hour and 32 minutes to an hour and 22 minutes.
Well, probably not that, because they probably...
Wait, what's the name of the director of this movie?
I don't know who the director is.
Release the director of Black Cauldron Cut.
I don't know. The guy who was directing a lot of Disney movies in the, like, Silver Era was named, like, Wolfgang something. He directed, like, good movies and bad movies. I didn't really find a distinct style from him. I think Walt Disney was mainly the leading force in a lot of those movies. But I don't know who the director is of this Black Cauldron movie.
Well, they should release the cut of his movie.
So that's our behind-the-scenes nugget. That was a very long behind-the-scenes nugget, but it was fun. So,
all right, let's talk about the movie.
So talking about the movie, I mentioned before, or we've mentioned before, that we really got behind the cult following for this movie. And that I said that I actually really enjoyed it.
I thought it was okay. I never really got in the cult following. I mean, I was in it, I guess you could say, but I never thought it was, like, great. I just thought that was, like, it's okay.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was, I would say it was probably good.
It's a nice adventure movie, and it had some good ideas, but it falls flat underneath a lot of executing.
I don't know what I was thinking when I first watched this movie, because rewatching it, I did not like it nearly as much.
Did you see a mess of a movie?
I was like, wow. I don't know what exactly. I mean, it's...
I think you put it in A tier when you did your tier list.
Seriously?
I think you did. It was either A or B. You put it in.
Yeah. I didn't like this one as much, nearly as much as I did first time watching it. It's just, I just don't find the characters that likable. Can't really get behind any of them. They're just, no, most of them just kind of...
They're not likable. It's just they're too boring. They don't have anything.
Well, they're just nothing about them pops.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of, they get on my nerves. Like,
Taryn is the worst protagonist. Let's just put that out there right now.
Like, it's right out of the gate, we come to Taryn and he's wanting to be a warrior. Which, I mean, yeah, the character states their objective. But then he is constantly repeating it to us throughout the entire movie. While being a wuss. And being an absolute, like, messing everything up. That's like if I walk around the house all day saying, I want to be the perfect scholar at school, and then don't work on school the whole day. That's basically the equivalent. And I'm just bugging you about how I want to be good at school. Like, that's annoying. And it's like... You're not even doing anything. Why are you bugging me about how much you want to be a warrior? A warrior! And you're not even doing anything. Like, it constantly messes up. It's like, oh, heroes make mistakes. The best heroes make mistakes. Yeah, but they make, like, logical mistakes. They make mistakes that we would make. Instead, Taryn makes the dumbest mistakes that no one in their right mind would make. Like, he's sitting there, oh, I'm gonna go on a mission with Henwen.
He loses Henwen within 5 minutes.
And like, straight up in 5 minutes. Oh, look at a pawn. There I am in a warrior cut. So he's being like, I don't know, narcissistic. He's like, wow, look at me. I'm so brave and strong and awesome. It's like, oh, okay. Well, he's daydreaming. Cut him some slack, Eli.
And then he loses Henwen. And then he goes to find Henwen. And then he escapes with Henwen. And they almost break out and he gets captured.
Like,
and while in the process, he gets himself alert that he lets people to his presence.
I don't know. Like, Taryn isn't heroic. That's my... I'm not saying that Taryn is supposed to be perfect in every way.
No, no heroes... Heroes are boring if they're perfect.
But this story is literally a hero's journey story.
Cough, cough.
This is literally a hero's journey story, where an unlikely low-life person from the poverty rises up and goes on a big journey and wins the day with his heart... to defeat the big mighty bad guy.
It's like they tried to make a Luke Skywalker, but he was a million miles away from the greatness of Luke Skywalker.
Like, it's a hero's journey story. He needs to be a hero. He needs to be heroic. But he causes more problems than he solves. Like, he's... Okay, so you could argue, oh, he gets the Black Cauldron. He solves all of his problems with one.
Well, he gets rid of his sword, too.
But, like, how he gets there is way more troublesome than it needed to be if Taryn just... was smart about things. if Taron actually thought through things instead of just like, oh no, like, and then he gets distracted and goes on a billion other things before he actually does what he's supposed to do. And like, I mean, I guess it's like, oh, it's part of the story. Like, he loses Henwen, and then he has to go into the castle, and that's where he meets the Horned King. And
this feels like this feels like them trying to be like Lord of the Rings, but not nearly as good.
Yeah, it definitely was like, and then
because I think the book for Black Cauldron was written in 1965, and then Lord of the Rings and Hobbit came out way before that. The books, not the movies. The books came out way before the Black Cauldron book. So there's definitely some similarities you can pull from there.
I don't know. I was going to say something else. Gurgi definitely annoys me.
An awful sidekick.
So
out of all the sidekicks, Gurgi's the worst. Other than the mice from Cinderella, Gurgi's the worst.
First of all, the names. Can't pronounce half of these names. They sound like spinach recipes. And they are annoying. So I can't get behind them. And so the big quote-unquote sacrifice of the whole movie is when Gurgi goes into the Black Cauldron. It's like, oh no, isn't it so sad? Taron's so sad. Even though it seemed like he was annoyed at Gurgi for like half the movie.
I know, he's like annoyed at Gurgi for like half of him, like getting mad at him. And all of a sudden we're supposed to buy into that he's sad that Gurgi's dead. Like, you know, he was mad at him for most of this movie.
Well, and you can say, well, they built up their relationship throughout the whole thing, but not very well. Even no, then, I think it wasn't Taron despising Gurgi right up until he died. It was implied, I guess, that he liked him before that. But even when he started liking Gurgi, it was a sudden change, like just bam. Yeah. I like you now.
We could have used that 10 minutes that Jeffrey Katzenberg cut out.
Yeah, maybe it has some more character development in it.
Release the director's cut of Black Cauldron.
So the big sacrifice of the movie has no emotional weight because I'm not getting behind the character emotionally because I don't care about him because he's annoying because he gets on my nerves. So that's a problem. If you don't get behind the characters, then nothing in the story matters. You don't really care. And a lot of the choices that the characters made in this movie just didn't seem like the most logical choice. Like, they're just, or it was, like, contrived, and then, like, or the baubles thing that Princess Alanwi has, they use them to, like, what, guide them through the castle and stuff, and then we never see it again.
Yeah, what happens in a bauble?
Like, they show this example of how they get out, and then they never use it again. Like, okay, so that was one time, but
And then, for some reason, the thing that's most important to them is this pig. Like, of all animals to choose, why would you choose a pig to be the most important thing on your journey?
That's not really an issue. Like, this is a magical pig.
That's just a nitpick. Like, why would you choose a pig? Like, you can choose, like, any other animal, and you chose a pig. Yeah. Pigs are, like, the most helpless animals that you can choose.
Yeah, that's probably why they chose it, because you have to protect the pig, the magical pig.
I would have chosen a dog.
I don't think that's really an issue. But it is an issue that they don't explain how the pig got its magical powers. Yeah. Or what the Black Cauldron does. They say that it has, what, the power to rule the world?
They always say it has power, but we never know what that power is.
They say, like, once that it has the power to, I think, raise an army of the dead or something?
Yeah, raise an army of the dead. Like,
it's not really clearly specified what exactly this Black Cauldron does. And it's like, oh, if you get in it, then you die. Like, okay, that's new information that I never heard before. You couldn't have said that in the beginning, Mr. Intro Guy. So there's just some, like, things that they should have specified. I don't want to sit here and be negative the whole time, though, because I feel like some of you are already getting annoyed, but,
What can we give as a positive?
What do we like about this film? Well, the Horned King
Horned King is creepy.
Horned King is very,
I like
well
his
done.
Voice. It's super creepy.
I really liked the Horned King.
It's fitting. We're watching this around Halloween, and there's, like, Army of the Dead.
Yeah.
It's, so it's fitting that we're watching this.
Horned King is definitely one of the creepiest Disney villains out there. I think he was very well done as a villain. Like, he's menacing. Yeah. You feel his presence when he walks into a room. He definitely has a distinct, like, vibe going for him. So I think definitely as the Horned King for a villain, he worked.
I feel like I should like them because I like adventure movies. Adventure movies I find really enjoyable. Like Lord of the Rings, I love. Because it's a big adventure movie, like big, like trotting this big place.
Yeah, and I mean, as a hero's journey movie, it's fine. If you don't think about it too much, then it's probably fine.
Yeah,
I like to think about movies, and as soon as I start thinking about the Black Cauldron, it falls apart. So
yeah, like this could have been a really good adventure, like hero's journey adventure movie, like Lord of the Rings style, but it falls flat with a bunch of mistakes.
Also, the world is never really built out in this.
Yeah.
Like, they never explain...
It's not as interesting as Middle Earth is. Not,
yeah, exactly.
Middle Earth is awesome.
It's clearly defined everything that's in Middle Earth. We actually get a full map of the entire world of Middle Earth. And in this, it's just kind of like, oh, it's a magical land. Okay.
You never get to meet any of the inhabitants that dwell in this land. No creatures.
Yeah, like halfway through the movie, and then we're introduced to a bunch of other new magical creatures. And it's just like, this world isn't even clearly defined. It's just...
It feels too small.
Yeah, it's like a generic...
It feels like a big, like, nature reserve, almost.
It's just, like, it's not built out.
Whereas
it's
the Lord of the Rings actually feels huge. Like, you see, like, mountains and, like, mountain ranges and everything. Like, cookies and cream mountains, as you like to call them. Here, you don't see anything.
The world is not built, like, it's not built out, or it's not clearly defined what exactly is in this world. It's just generic fantasy world, and, oh, let's just throw in all these magical creatures.
It might add that Gurgi is very similar to Gollum.
Yeah, he's like, very similar.
That's my main thing. I feel like they took a few things from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, Gurgi's but the version of Gollum that's in the movies is after this. So
I know, I understand that, but Lord of the Rings books came first. This book came after. So it's up and
yeah, but Gollum in the Lord of the Rings books is different than the Andy Serkis portrayal. Yeah, like the Andy Serkis portrayal is a little different than in the books.
How is he in the books?
He's not like Gollum. He's like, I don't know. People reading the books before the movies probably thought
Dylan
of Gollum.
Would know.
People reading the books probably thought of Gollum a little bit differently than the Andy Serkis version.
Even then, Dylan has told me that they left a lot of things out of the Lord of the Rings movies, so they're not even. He admits they're not perfect. They left a lot of stuff out.
Yeah.
So overall, this had potential to be a good hero's journey adventure movie before Lord of the Rings, but it fell flat.
Yeah, I feel like I'm being really negative, but I mean, if you don't think about it too much, it's probably just a fine hero's journey movie.
Yeah, you can watch it.
It's a bit dark, maybe for the younger ones.
Watch it around Halloween time, that's where it fits.
I mean, sorry, maybe not for the younger ones. But might creep out a few children, it's very dark. I kind of like the dark, edgy tone. It kind of makes it a little bit unique. It kind of stands out from all the other Disney movies because it's distinct tone and vibe. There were some nice musical moments. Some points in the score were a bit nice.
Yeah.
There are some nice themes in there. So, did I enjoy the movie? There's some enjoyment, yeah. Mm.
Yeah,
there's not too many jokes, or there's not much entertainment value.
The only thing you can argue that brings comic relief is Gurgi, and even I didn't find that funny.
Or you could argue the thing that brings comic relief is how dumb the characters are.
Taron brings comic relief throughout his attempts to be a hero.
If you like to laugh at characters for dumb decisions they make, Taron is a stand-up comedian.
yup.
He is one of the worst protagonists that I have ever seen.
Yeah, he's point of reference to remember from this podcast is Taron is a terrible protagonist.
Like, if you want to say, oh, Taron can just be an unlikable protagonist.
He's not unlikable.
He's portrayed as he's supposed to be likable. So if you like unlikable protagonists, watch Spider-Man 3.
That's just that one scene with emo Peter Parker.
Well, also the whole, like, he's so prideful.
I've heard people say that he's kind of unbearable throughout the whole thing, even before he turns emo.
Yeah. So, Spider-Man's supposed to be portrayed as an unlikable protagonist.
Well, you could also argue Andrew Garfield is kind of unlikable, too, because that Peter Parker was even worse than the one in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, and then, Andrew Garfield was trying to be likable and didn't
work. I don't blame Andrew Garfield for The Amazing Spider-Man. Like, not anymore. Like, I mean, I did at first. I was like, ooh, he's bad. But then as I've, like, let it sink in and, like, given it some thought, I'm like, no, that wasn't his fault. He was just given bad scripts. That's what I've settled on now. He was given bad scripts.
Well, also, the acting is not really that great in this movie.
Oh, no, it's awful.
The acting is not really that great.
And a lot of it feels like fake. They're like, oh no.
Yeah, I felt like there were a lot of moments in the movie where I was like, didn't really put your heart into that one, did you?
A lot of these films feel like they put like their every effort into these recordings. This one, there was a lot of points where I didn't feel like they didn't care.
Yeah, the characters are very bland and kind of annoying sometimes, and the acting does not help at all. The acting, in fact, makes it worse. But speaking of acting, acting is not everything when it comes to these characters. Animation is another big thing, and the animation in this movie I did think was quite competent. This is the movie where all of the 9 old men are gone. So this is the new guard of Disney animators. All of the people who...
The 9 young men?
Well, no, it's more than that. So, I guess you could say, 9 young men. Sure. These are the people who will go on to make movies like Aladdin and Little Mermaid. Okay, and
how many do we have left? Let's see. We got Great Mouse Detective, Oliver... And,
6.
Wait. Great Mouse Detective, Oliver and Company, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Rescue Zone Under, Aladdin. 6. That is 6. Oh, okay, Aladdin's going to be a very interesting episode.
Yeah, well, I'm not done talking yet. Hold on. So this is the new people who are going to make famous movies for the Renaissance. But this is their first movie. And I don't hold against them too much, and I don't really hold too much against the animators because the animation is pretty good. I do think the animation is competently done. It is definitely not the Disney style. Like, if I did not know this was a Disney movie, I probably wouldn't think it was a Disney movie.
No, it doesn't feel like one either.
Because the 9 old men were gone... And this new group of animators is trying to figure out how to keep the lights on.
The 9 young men.
They didn't exactly... I mean, it's definitely not the Disney style. Is it bad animation? No. But is it distinctly Disney? No. I would have to say no. It does not look like Disney. It looks more like a...
it looks like a short...
It looks like
a TV show.
It looks like a Don Bluth movie. That's what it looks like. If you don't know who Don Bluth is...
He was the big rival for Disney at this point in time.
Well, so Don Bluth is like a separate little animation thing. I don't really like too many of his movies. But he does
You've
have...
You've seen his movies?
No, I've... I think we've seen a few. Really? He's pretty popular. And I don't remember too many of his movies, but I do... I'll see clips and stuff. And he definitely has a distinct style.
Which one did he make?
He's made a Great American Tale. His most famous, I think, is Secret of Nim. I think we might have seen Great American Tale. I feel like I vaguely remember that.
I don't think we have.
But just from what I've seen of his work, he definitely has a distinct style. And Don Bluth did used to work for Disney, which is why he went off and
branched off
into his own animation company. And
did he make the Care Bears?
No, he didn't make the Care Bears.
Yeah, because that would beat this at the box office.
Yeah, this movie did so bad that the Care Bears movie beat this at the box office, which is kind of sad, but probably the Care Bears movie. I would guess
if any Care Bears fans are out there, you'll probably be happy.
I would guess that the Care Bears movie is probably better than this movie. Who knows? But Don Bluth was beating Disney at this time, which is hard to imagine that an animation company was beating Disney, especially now when Disney owned the world.
I think Oliver Company was kind of the one that saved them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But Don Bluth was beating Disney at this time. Don Bluth was more successful than Disney in this period of time. He was kind of single-handedly keeping the animation department alive because people were done with animation at this time. People thought animation as an art form was going to die. Obviously, it didn't because of the Renaissance, and Disney just totally knocked it out of the park because they found their footing, but they haven't quite found it yet. So the animation department is in a little bit of danger. We all know how the story ends because this is the past, but you know, still fun to look back at the history nonetheless.
It's always fun to look back at history.
I love this period in Disney history.
It's always fun to look back at history, like look at old stories.
Yeah,
how it happened.
Yeah, exactly. Like I love.
Because we know the outcome.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, they didn't know the outcome. We do.
Like this was a very scary time for Disney animation.
And probably 10 years from now, I'll be able to look back at stories from like this decade and be like, oh, look, that's how that played out.
Yeah, so with this movie, animators were very scared.
But
and
of course, there could always be different timelines where things play out differently, as we've learned from What If.
Yeah, so this is like my favorite time in Disney history. This is like just the most fun for me to look back at. Because definitely, you know, of course, the Renaissance, that's an amazing run for Disney. All the behind-the-scenes facts in that era are so fun to look back at. This is just, I am very excited because we were so close to the Renaissance. It's going to be fun. So,
yeah, two more movies in this dark age, and then we got Renaissance. Let's start with The Little Mermaid.
Yes! So, yeah, that'll conclude our thoughts on Black Cauldron.
I'd probably give it a 4.
Yeah, I'd give it a 4.
It had some good, bold ideas, but it fumbled.
I feel like it would work better as a musical.
I think it would be better as a live-action remake.
Who knows? Maybe. But yeah, that'll conclude our
episode. Yeah, Disney, remake this. Remake the movies that need help for a change.
Yeah, instead of the classics and making them just worse.
Yeah, quit remaking the classics. Remake the ones that are good but need help.
Yeah, so yeah, that'll conclude our close us out.
That's our show for tonight, folks. Be sure to go watch Eli at Hollingsworth Enterprises on via JBA Studios. Don't forget to watch one of us at Minecraft Madness, Hollingsworth Gaming, Movie Agents YouTube channel, and that's it. Movie Agents YouTube channel. Be sure to go check out Eli at Hollingsworth Enterprises on via JBH. Oh, no, I already said that. You should go watch, be sure to listen to this podcast. Be sure to check out the X-Files podcast that I have with Eli Spencer. We'll be coming out with season 2 of the X-Files this Saturday, so be sure to stop by for that.
And you'll hear us real soon.